Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. Joining you on a kind of rainy, kind of gross Tuesday, but it's good news for Milwaukee Bucks fans. Last time we chatted, they had dropped game one of their Eastern Conference opening playoff series. They have now won the next three games. They're up 3-1 on the Magic. They will go for the series victory on Wednesday. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. And on the other line, as always, is Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Matt, we talked last time about a team that looked like it was kind of in disarray. I mean, it really had a rough game one showing against the Magic. I think everybody's... You know, it's sort of, for everybody, raised some red flags and sounded the alarm a little bit, but things are back to normal. Three straight wins, Milwaukee, I think, putting together their most impressive performance in Game 4, although I suppose that's arguable. Game 3 was pretty solid as well. In a general macro state of affairs, I don't know if we'd say the Bucks are clicking on all cylinders exactly, but things look pretty good, especially on the defensive end. I guess just from a state of the Bucks position, do you feel like the Bucks have made enough progress that you'd feel comfortable with how the team is going forward, or do you still feel like there's some pretty big steps to take for this team?
You know, I think that they've taken the steps, right? Like, they started out in game one playing like it was still one of the seeding games. Like, there was no juice there. And during the seeding games, that makes sense, as we've discussed many times, because they had nothing to play for. And you know, they didn't look like a top seed. They didn't look like, you know, one of the favorites to win the title in that game one against Orlando. They got the doors blown off of them. And I think that was kind of the wake-up call they needed. I think the last time we talked, we were kind of wondering if that would be the wake-up call that they would actually, finally get out of bed to. And I think they did. I think in games 2, 3, and 4, they've definitely played a lot better. It's all started at the defensive end. Where they have, you know, severely limited the Magic, especially inside. And when the Magic haven't shot the three ball well, it hasn't been close. And when they have shot the three ball really well, it's been a little bit closer, but still not all that close. So I think that the defense picking up and the intensity picking up is a positive sign for the Bucks. Obviously, the three-pointers will always be something that makes the fan base nervous and makes people worried, because that's in the Bucks just do. But when you have double-digit wins, in succession, despite some good shooting, I mean, Orlando made, 18 three-pointers, I think, in game 4 or something like that. They might have made 18 three-pointers in a bunch of the games. But I think it's going okay, and I think Chris Middleton's starting to get going a little bit, though it's been shaky. Definitely not good in game 2, especially when it comes to his shooting. Game 3, a little bit better. Game 4, looked like he fell back off until a crazy good fourth quarter that he had to help put the game away. I think the offense still has some room to grow. It has some places where, they need to improve. It can't just be all Giannis and then maybe somebody else, depending on the game. I think, obviously, you want to get everything you can from Giannis. But I just feel like the consistency on the offensive end, it just doesn't feel like it's there. It doesn't feel like, the Bucks have like necessarily a thing that is consistently working for them, or a player who's consistently working for them. So I think they'll have to figure that out, especially, presumptively going into round 2 where the Miami Heat are waiting.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit more about the Miami Heat. I want to talk more about what we've seen in Orlando, or in the Orlando series, but I also want to jump back for a second and look at some comments that the Bucks players made before and after this game 4 victory over the Magic, relating to some bigger stuff, some more serious stuff, and that is the shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, which is, I think most people realize by now, a national story. If not, JSOnline.com has a ton of coverage Monday into Tuesday, looking at some of the events, the unrest in Kenosha, and the resulting from this shooting that took place Sunday evening. George Hill said some really interesting stuff afterwards. He said basically he didn't feel like they should even be in Orlando. That we do know there was some buzz going before players reported to the bubble. bubble. Some players did not feel 100% comfortable going there, feeling like this is a moment in American history where social justice should be top of mind, and maybe the sort of frivolity of pro sports should take a back seat to what these players could potentially be doing in the community and marches, things like that. You know, George Hill's comments kind of echoed that. He said, he basically feels like that this should be secondary and that there are more important things, and seeing shootings like that are reminders that no matter how much marching has taken place so far in 2020, we still have things like this happening, that police officers and especially black citizens are having confrontations that just escalate beyond what they should. What is your reaction, your take on stuff like that? I mean, George Hill said, we're here now. There's nothing we can do about it. I don't know. You know, I hesitate to ask because I don't want it to make it sound like, does it mean the players are going to try to opt out now and leave the bubble? I don't want it to be just about basketball, but I do feel like for a lot of players, LeBron James talking about it too, there's a conflict here that playing basketball at this time is a difficult decision that they've made. How do you sort of read George Hill's comments and Chris Middleton's, all the guys that spoke about it?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't heard a ton about it just because, you know, I was doing something else on Sunday night and I wasn't attached to my phone. And so Monday morning, I, you know, obviously was reading the Journal Sentinel and I started to read about it and educate myself about it. And then Bud comes on pregame and he doesn't usually make a statement. And he kind of requested to the Bucks PR person who was in charge of the Zoom, like, hey, can I say something? And, you know, that was his choice. No one asked him about it. And he decided he wanted to bring this up. He wanted to discuss Jacob Blake and kind of send his well wishes to him and his family, you know, after the incident had taken place. And, you know, from there, like, I was pretty certain that, you know, guys in the Bucks would be talking about it post game. Bud said they hadn't talked about it as a team yet, just because they practiced on Sunday earlier in the afternoon. They didn't convene again as a team after that. And then they'd just gotten back to the arena for the game. So they had no opportunity, you know, no kind of built-in moment where they were already all together to talk about it. But then after the game, I was interested to see who was going to talk, who was going to say stuff, who was going to, you know, who had known about it. Because Giannis, you know, he was one of the first guys who talked, and he said he didn't know. Just because, you know, he's been in playoff mode, he's not been on his phone, he's not been on social media. That's all pretty common for him. You know, and I feel like he's someone who, you know, wants to be in the know about things like that. And so he did say that he will watch it and he'll have, you know, an answer for it, or, you know, a point to make or something to say about it next game. But then Chris Middleton came on and I thought he was very straightforward and what he said and kind of discussing how, you know, it's scary, you know, and also that, you know, not just that it's scary, but, you know, it's, I think he called it sickening. It doesn't get any sicker than that. And so, you know, he also, you know, mentioned how, you know, he was in Charleston, South Carolina a few years ago, 5 years ago, when nine people were shot, you know, inside of a church. Nine black people were shot inside of a church. And so he said this isn't anything new, and they've been trying to, you know, as players, as people in the NBA, as, you know, just black Americans, or, you know, people, you know, black people who live in America. You know, obviously extending that to Giannis and other people who are on the team, may not be necessarily from here, but live here, and say, hey, like, it's on lawmakers, on police departments to stop shooting us. That was the quote from Chris Middleton, and saying there's different ways to de-escalate situations. And obviously, you mentioned George Hill. I think his thoughts on the matter kind of made the rounds more than anybody else's, and rightfully so. He had some very strong things to say, you know, saying, you know, that it was sickening, it's heartless, it's a messed up situation. He didn't say messed up. He said something a little bit stronger. You know, and he said that, you know, his kind of mind isn't really with the game at all times, you know, because it breaks his heart to see that happening in Wisconsin. You know, and obviously that's not the first, you know, police involved shooting incident or police shooting incident in Wisconsin. That there have been things over the past few years that have happened, Yeah, but for George Hill, I mean, I feel like this is pretty consistent with the way he's spoken about the bubble, even before the bubble was a thing. I remember back in April, you know, back when he was just, you know, the world was just grappling with COVID-19, where he was like, yeah, if we play again, like, great, I'll whatever. If we don't play again, like, that's fine too. Like, what matters the most is, you know, is life and people's health and people's safety. And he's like, basketball is temporary. Basketball is like something I do. Like, you know, but I'm going to make sure that my family is taken care of. And, you know, there's bigger things in the world. And I think that's something that he and other players have reiterated, you know, since then, especially after the George Floyd murder and, you know, the protests that spawned. And, you know, there was some, you know, Kyrie Irving led kind of dissension to playing in the bubble, saying, hey, that could take away from the focus of what a lot of people were protesting about. And George Hill, I don't know what camp he was in when in those NBA PA meetings, but I feel like he might have been in that camp. He might have been pushing to, you know, or he might have sided with that, saying, hey, maybe we don't play. Maybe we just kind of keep on working on what we're working on and go from there. Because he did say, you know, that this was taking away from everything. You know, he said, well, let me get the quote exactly for you. You know, coming here just took all the focal points off of what the issues are. But we're here. It is what it is. And so, yeah, I feel like that's what his message has been the whole time. And so he's been consistent in saying that or believing that or feeling that. And just on Monday when he said those things, it came with an extra twinge of kind of pain and hopelessness and frustration.
Awkward transition to try to go back into basketball. Chris Middleton, like you said, speaking very eloquently about it and his experiences in his hometown of Charleston. Chris Middleton has been, I think, a little bit of a lightning rod on the court for Bucks fans and national audiences for a long time. And we've talked about it, and I'm even hesitant to revisit this rabbit hole a little bit. But I think you might be starting to see this again. You could see where this is headed. As the Bucks get deeper into the postseason, there's always questions raised about whether or not they have a true, sort of, quote-unquote, true number two option behind Giannis. And my problem with the Middleton sort of narrative that has always been in play is that he was excellent in the playoffs for three straight series until the Toronto series last year, when he was tasked with, you know, trying to handle Kawhi Leonard, who was playing kind of at the peak of his powers, and he didn't have an electric series by any means. And now here we are again. He's been aggressive at times. He had sort of famously had just 2 points in game two of this series, but he's certainly been looking for a shot. He's been taking the shots. He looks confident. He had a phenomenal fourth quarter in game four after he'd been pretty quiet to that point, and actually, you know, was struggling to that point in the game, but looked very, very comfortable. And the quote afterwards is Giannis telling Chris Middleton he should just keep shooting until his arms fall off. That's how much confidence the Bucks have in him. And I do think people who know this team well and know NBA basketball well know how great Chris Middleton is. But here we are again. We're at a point where there is some attention being paid to whether or not he is a guy who can help this Bucks team get to the next level. As you watch him play, are you seeing a guy who's struggling? I mean, I think at this point, to me, it just boils down to shots not falling. The looks are good. He's playing like he normally does. It's just some shots haven't fallen. Maybe that's oversimplifying it. How would you evaluate what Chris Middleton has done in this series?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I think you're right. There are some shots that are open shots, that are good shots, that are shots that he normally takes that aren't going down. But I think, you know, what Giannis told him and telling him to shoot till your arms fall off, shoot every time you get the ball. I think that is kind of pointing out that, like, Chris Middleton sometimes is trying to make the right play too much, right? Like, you know, if you're kind of playing the game on paper, you're trying to play the most efficient version of basketball. That involves cutting out some of the shots that Chris Middleton likes and is good at. You know, he makes tough buckets. Like, you know, there aren't too many other guys on the Bucks who even take tough shots, but he takes them and he makes them. And sometimes in an effort to be a better, you know, piece of the offense, to be a better facilitator, to get the better shot, Chris Middleton will, you know, not take shots that maybe he could or should. And he'll, you know, see two defenders coming at him and say, okay, I know that I'm being blitzed right now. I can find the next pass and get somebody else a better shot. Or, you know, I can, you know, if I feel like I'm, you know, getting, you know, covered by my man, I can kind of look over and see somebody cutting and get them the ball, or anything like that. And there are some situations, as he showed in game four, where maybe you just got to shoot the ball. Maybe if you're Chris Middleton, you need to just trust in the fact that your ability to take and make those tough shots is valuable. And when you are getting going, when you're in a rhythm, you know, that is worth something. And you don't always have to make the quote unquote right play. You don't have to, you know, turn down a contested shot to, you know, try and maybe get somebody else an uncontested shot. When you're Chris Middleton, you could just shoot that shot. And I think that's part of the thing that Giannis was trying to tell him. Like, you know, they're going to need him. They're going to need him to do that. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, going to work all the time, right? Like, sometimes he could take those tough shots and they don't go in. And then you're suddenly like, why is Chris Middleton taking all of these tough shots when he could just pass it and spread it around to his teammates? But I think there needs to be a healthy balance. There needs to be the ability or the opportunity to show opposing defenses, hey, if you do this, you know, he can still shoot. He can still score. It's not just like, oh, if we blitz him, he's going to pass it because he knows it's the right play, and then we can be ready for that pass and pick it off. Or we can just be happy that Chris Middleton isn't shooting the ball. We'd rather somebody else shoots the ball because chances are that person is not as good of a shooter as Chris Middleton, especially given the way that he shot the ball this season. So I think that that's kind of a good lesson for Chris and for the Bucks, you know, especially when he was 1-for-9 before that in the game, that there is that confidence there, that there is that ability there, and that is something that he is going to have to do, and they're going to need to, you know, not necessarily allow him to do, but facilitate him doing. Like, they're going to need to give him kind of time and space to go to work, to do the things that he does, whether it's tough turnaround, baseline fadeaways, or, you know, kind of try to create off the dribble, whether it's for a step back or for, you know, maybe like a 19 footer or something like that. You know, there's going to be some times where Chris Middleton needs to take over because Giannis can't be the only one taking over. And, you know, we haven't seen too many times this playoffs that where Eric Bledsoe's taken over. Eric Bledsoe has taken over in regular season games. We've seen it a decent amount, depending on the matchup, but we haven't seen it recently. And, you know, the ways he can take over generally involve getting to the hoop. And in the playoffs, it's going to be a lot harder. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be too many Brook Lopez takeover games. We might have one a series where he can get really working in the post and also, you know, pop out and shoot, make a couple threes. Wesley Matthews isn't taking over. Like, he's on the list. The number of guys who can take over a game on the Bucks isn't huge. And Chris Middleton absolutely is one of those guys, and he needs to exercise, you know, and flex those muscles.
18 of his 21 points came in the fourth quarter. Like you said, he was only 1-9 shooting, but really helped the Bucks pull away. Win game four kind of convincingly. I think I misspoke earlier saying that game four was probably their best showing. Unquestionably, game three was better than game four overall, but the Bucks wound up with their biggest margin of victory in game four thanks to Chris Middleton and a big fourth quarter. So we know the Bucks are probably going to win this series. I mean, we don't know that for absolute certain, but pretty good chance this gets wrapped up on Wednesday. The Bucks would then, they know now, they would be facing the Miami Heat. Very much chalk in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Every series, a four-game sweep, except, oddly enough, the 1-8 matchup between the Bucks and the Magic to this point, with three Eastern Conference teams, the favorites Boston, Toronto, and Miami. Technically, Miami wasn't the higher seed, but I think everyone expected them to beat the Pacers. Pacers a little banged up. Miami in a better spot right now, and they did. They swept it. They finished things off on Tuesday night. But Miami's an interesting challenge, and we've talked about them in the bubble. The Bucks needed a wild second half rally to beat them. That's not the first time, actually, in recent history that's happened. But the Heat are an interesting matchup problem. I mean, Bam Adebayo has had some success against Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, Giannis has gotten the best of him too at times. A lot of guys that weren't here in past years, Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, certainly Jimmy Butler has been a big-time additive to what Miami is doing. Fellow Marquette University product Jay Crowder is in the starting lineup. A lot of intrigue here, and they do match up well with the Bucks. They shoot the ball extremely well. That's posed a problem, especially in the bubble when everyone is shooting well. And they have been able to mitigate what the Bucks are able to do. As you see this matchup now, not that, you don't want to look too far ahead. There's still a game to go against Orlando.
We can look all the way far ahead. It's fine.
Let's look a little bit further ahead. Talk about what maybe one or two things you really think are going to be keys here in this Miami series.
Well, I think defense, to put on, I mean, I don't want to sound too much like Bud, but defense is going to be huge. The Heat are a team that, has been able to pick and pop and take advantage of the Bucks. Drop defensive scheme and a bunch in the past. They don't shoot as many threes, or they haven't shot as many threes as, say, the Bucks take. I mean, the Bucks have shot, 40 threes a game here in the playoffs. Meanwhile, the Heat have shot about 33 threes a game. Both teams are, interestingly enough, both teams are making 39.1% of their threes in the playoffs through four games. Small sample sizes, different opponents. But it's just interesting. But I know that whatever numbers the Heat are putting up in terms of 3-point shooting, they're going to continue to go up, against the Bucks, because that's what the Bucks do, right? Like, they defend the paint. They try and hold teams down as much as they can in the paint, and they force you to beat them from three. And in doing that, they're trying to channel those threes through people that they're comfortable leaving open. The thing with the Heat is that they can put together some lineups where you're not very comfortable leaving a lot of guys open. I mean, if you put Duncan Robinson out there, you can't let him shoot. You can't even let him shoot with, 2 7-footers in his face. The man is incredible. But then you also have maybe Tyler Hero, or, you put Kendrick Nunn out there, you put Jimmy Butler out there, Kelly Olynyk, Andre Iguodala. Like, all those guys can shoot the three. They can, and in certain games, they can shoot really well. I know in the past, when Iguodala was with the Warriors, the Bucks would just leave him open because, well, when the other options are like Steph and KD and Klay, you have to leave Dre in the corner. And there have been games where he's gotten hot. The Heat know what it takes to beat the Bucks. They need to be, very physical, which they have been, and they are. That's part of, hashtag Heat culture, is that they're very physical. They're gonna get into you. They're gonna kind of push you around, and they're gonna battle you, from start to finish. They're gonna try and shoot the ball really well, get inside, get in your head. Jimmy Butler's gonna try and find his way inside and to the foul line. He hasn't been a very prolific 3-point shooter, but in the playoffs he's pulled that out, and he's been willing to shoot it more, and he's a kind of a clutch player, and can really put a team on his shoulders. In the fourth quarter, the Bucks actually haven't seen Jimmy Butler in, I think he didn't play in like two of the three games they played against each other this season. And so, having him be in the game is obviously something that will change the dynamic. It'll be interesting to see, how much time he spends defending Chris Middleton and how that matchup goes. If Chris can get his shots off, if he can do what he wants to do against Jimmy Butler, I think that could be a huge, critical, pivotal matchup in the series. And you mentioned Bam and, the great defenders here in the league. I'd have to look back at my voting, but I'm pretty sure I had Bam on one of my two all defensive teams. And I think I had him for most improved player too. I just think he's been great. The way that he's been able to, not just rebound and play defense, but be an offensive facilitator, and hub on their as part of their offense, and a scorer, and just all the different dimensions he can bring to the game. I think this series is going to be fascinating, and I'm looking forward to starting to kind of dig into it a little bit more, and more importantly, start actually watching the games.
Yeah, we don't get any more data to pull from with Miami sweeping through Indiana. I mean, Indiana had, with Sabonis injured, they had an uphill challenge here with Miami, but You know, I was thinking about this, especially as we talk about Chris Middleton, sort of the decision that this Bucks team made to sign Middleton before the season, which of course was like six seasons ago now, it feels like, and let Malcolm Brogdon walk. And Brogdon battled some injury trouble this year, as was a fear when this was sort of a top of mind discussion that he might, you know, that he might be someone who doesn't get through a full season. It does seem like that this is a decision in the short term has looked good for the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, you can't really evaluate any contracts, any multi-year contracts right away, but this looking back seems like the Bucks probably got the better end of this. Is it too early to evaluate that, or do you feel like, you know, the Bucks should already feel pretty good about the decision they made this offseason?
Well, I feel like in my gut, I just want to say that, like, the Bucks did get the better end of the deal, or at least, like, things worked out just fine. But at the same time, like, in my head, I'm like, well, we should probably, like, wait and, like, be measured and, like, wait for a few more years, figure out the full breadth of what happens, what spawns from that deal, who the Bucks take with the first round pick that they got from the Pacers, or what the or things to figure out. But at the same time, I mean, I think there's no arguing that Chris Middleton had, you know, an absolutely fantastic season. This year, he was nearly 50-40-90 from the shooting, and he averaged over 20 points a game. I think he was only if he made five more shots without missing, he would have been 50-40-90. So that's just, you know, an incredible accomplishment nonetheless. And I'm all but certain he'll be on one of the all NBA teams this year, which is just a level that I don't know how many people expected Chris Middleton to ever get to. But the fact that he got the big contract last summer, the 5-year, $178 million contract, and then he turned that into the season that he had, where he took even a bigger step up from being an all-star last year. I think he did everything the team asked of him. And I think Malcolm Brogdon, like, while he was in Milwaukee, he'd had a defined role, which was not going to be one of the top two guys in the team. And when Eric Bledsoe came in, made it clear that maybe he wasn't necessarily the clear third guy on the team, and Brook Lopez coming in, like, you know, there's just no chance for him to be more than necessarily a role player, even if he did play really well at certain points and played kind of maybe above his station or whatever you might want to call it at certain points. But there was always going to be injury questions. You know, he had some lingering things, and the Bucks had to make a tough decision. And that decision, you know, you can argue that they didn't have to make it, that they could have brought him back, that they could have gone into the tax, that they could have kept, you know, the guys that they kept and maybe sacrificed George Hill and kept Brogdon. You can make that argument. But I think if you're going to stay under the luxury tax, which the Bucks decided that was the goal for them to do this year, then that was the way they're going to have to go. They're going to have to move Brogdon, and the fact that they got a first-round draft pick and a second too, but they got those picks back, you know, for him. I think, you know, it's a positive. You don't want to lose somebody for nothing, if you could help it. And George Hill had a great year this year too. You know, his 3-point shooting being, I don't know if it finished the best in the league, but it was certainly close. And, you know, bringing back Brook Lopez and doing everything that they did, they didn't really miss a beat when it came to the regular season, and they still have the depth and the, you know, the talent to potentially make a run at the finals. And so I think, you know, as of right now, the Bucks, you would say, didn't necessarily lose all that much. And the guys who they do have did improve year over year, while Malcolm Brogdon, he had a solid year in Indiana and has an opportunity to be kind of one of the main guys for that team. And they had a good year too. So I think everybody can, you know, kind of, you know, go their separate ways and still find success, and it can be good for all parties. We'll see later in the playoffs if there will still be the narrative, you know, if the Bucks are falling behind in a series, if they lose the series. Like, oh, man, if they had Brogdon in this series, you know, things would have been different. But it's just so hard. I mean, you can't just say, like, oh, yeah, imagine if Malcolm Brogdon was there with every single other person. Like, this doesn't exist in a vacuum. Like, you have to, you know, measure all the variables as we have them. You can't just, you know, pick and choose. So it's something that I hope that we're not talking about later in the playoffs, that I hope I'm not writing about later in the playoffs, because I don't necessarily think it's germane to what's going on. I think, you know, decisions were made. And as of right now, I think everything you know, has played out reasonably, or, you know, reasonably well for both sides. And that's just kind of the nature of the beast in the NBA. Players are going to move teams. Teams have to make tough decisions. And, you know, I'm not going to – it's so hard to go back and litigate it, you know, after the fact, because you just don't know what would have happened before this had decisions been different. I mean, it's like blaming the field goal kicker at the end of a football game, right? Like, oh, you missed a 50-yard field goal. Your team would have won the game. It's like, but yeah, what about all those other things that happened in the game that could have made it so that that kicker didn't even have to try that field goal, right? Like, there's just so many things that if you try and, you know, untangle that web, you're just going to get more tangled up.
Philadelphia is another team facing some tough decisions. They fired coach Brett Brown on Monday, which sort of an unceremonious end to the process here. Obviously, an injury to Ben Simmons really derailed them. We don't know what's going to happen in free agency or this offseason, so it's obviously premature. But presumably, the Bucks, no matter what happens this year, will still be among the favorites next year. Giannis will still be here, no matter what happens with the Supermax. And I don't know if Philadelphia is now off the radar because of how disappointed this season was for them. I don't know where we'd put Indiana, this team we're just talking about. Is it just going to be, you think, these top four, these clear-cut four teams that have emerged in the East? Or do you think one of those other teams or another team entirely could sneak into the mix there?
Well, I'm fascinated to see what Philadelphia does because they have a ton of big decisions to make. And I don't know who's left on that team. I don't know who the coach is. I don't know if Elton Brand's still the GM. Like, I just don't know at all what their offseason looks like. This is, you know, I would guess. I mean, I'm not in Philadelphia. I'm not a Philadelphia fan. But, like, these have got to be pretty dark days for that franchise because they came in with such lofty expectations. You can argue that the process itself worked, right? Like, they tanked those seasons. They acquired a lot of young talent. They amassed a bunch of assets to be able to get a star like Jimmy Butler, like, last season. Like, they got Tobias Harris, and, like, they built this team that a lot of people thought, and I was one of them, could definitely be a top finals contender in the East. And I guess the issue itself wasn't the process; it was how they actually executed once they had all the assets, once they had all the players. Like, you have this great team, this team that on paper looks incredibly talented. It's just that whether it be coaching, whether it be injuries, whether it be players not playing, you know, up to expectations, whether it be some kind of broken scheme or whatever it was, I mean, that's for other people to try and figure out. I covered the Bucks, but whatever it was, you know, they couldn't capitalize on their moment. And I don't think I don't think the process was wrong or broken. It's just that once they did the process, they couldn't take the team over the finish line, you know, because we know that that team is incredibly talented. We know that that team, when playing at their best, you know, the Bucks saw it up close and personal on Christmas. Like, when they're playing at their best, they are a really, like, dang good team. And, you know, I think that that's one of the big what ifs, you know, is if maybe the season doesn't stop, or maybe that Ben Simmons doesn't get hurt again, or, you know, what does this look like if the Sixers have maybe, you know, a little bit more luck, you know, when it comes to, you know, injuries or what, you know, the kind of the scheduling or the way things shook out. And also, what if they were at their best more often than they were, not just because of injuries, but because of whatever, because of coaching, players, whatever it was. Like, how come they couldn't perform at their best, you know, more often? And who knows what happens now? Who knows, you know, who they build around or how they rebuild? I mean, we don't even know for the NBA when the next season is going to start or what the salary cap is going to look like and how that's going to affect teams and what kind of mess the pandemic is going to make for everybody in the future. But yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen next, and it'll be just, you know, endlessly interesting figuring out where they go from here.
Last thought before I let you go. Any other thoughts on this Bucks team? I certainly thought Wes Matthews has had some really good moments in this series. George Hill seems to have, you know, seems to be playing well again. It seems like everybody on the bench seems to be playing well again through game three, game four. Any other last thoughts you have before I let you go?
No, I'm just I personally am looking forward to the end of afternoon basketball.
Yeah, we've got a lot of that, don't we?
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I thought I would be because of better deadlines. Just don't like it. Messes with my day too much. My day feels lost, where you don't really have a full morning because you got to start doing pregame stuff in the morning, and you don't really have an evening because you're working into the evening, and then you're just like drained and dead. And that's not my schedule. I'm not used to that. So I want to get back to, you know, maybe having shoot around in the morning, a little break in the afternoon, a little chill time. And then a game at night when it doesn't really bother my family, when they're probably the kids are already going to bed. I mean, this is all very selfish.
Absolutely.
But, you know, as I've said many times before, media starts with me, and my schedule is most important. And so I would like for the Bucks to start playing in the evenings again, which would be beneficial for me. And I'm sure many people listening to this would also appreciate night games when they are, you know, not burdened by, you know, jobs that are normally during the day or family obligations, having to go to school and pick up their kids, or maybe not go to school and pick up their kids since their kids might be e-learning, not teaching their kids while playing the game or watching the game, you know, all that stuff. So the end of afternoon basketball, it will be a welcome addition to my life. And it was a nice experiment. It was fun at times where there were NBA games like all day long, you know, very, very, you know, March Madness feel to it. Except, you know, the all-day games for March Madness are over like 4 days. And we've had this for, I feel like, forever. So I'm ready for night games. I'm ready for prime time. I'm ready for the next round of the playoffs.
He is Matt Velasquez. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Covering the Milwaukee Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Presumably, we've still got quite a bit of basketball left. Bucks will play on Wednesday, looking to wrap up the first round series with the Orlando Magic. If they do not, they'll play two days later, Friday, in Game 6. If necessary, Game 7 would be on Sunday. Winner gets the Miami Heat. Thanks for joining us, Matt. We'll chat with you again real soon.